Right. VOB 92.9 FM and of course Hot 95.3 FM in combination for this brand new endeavor, this brand new series. It's a six-part series where of course we will be looking to engage you, the young and the young at heart, and of course various stakeholders in discussing solutions to the upsurge of crime in Barbados. My co-host today is Mr. Imran Richards. Producer is Mr. Dennis Johnson. And we have some special guests as well, Shamar Bernard. Shamar spent some time in prison and is now making a valiant effort at a renewed life. We'll also be hearing from Professor Dwayne Devenish, researcher and senior lecturer in management science at the UWI, and Ms. Kim Ramsey, who is a criminologist. All right. The Zoom link is up and working. I can see everybody. Hoping y'all can hear me fine. Give me a thumbs up if you can. All right. Thank you so much, Kashi.
Who was in studio assisting me.
My first time in VOB.
All right, here we go.
Imran Richards. Good evening to you, sir. How are you?
Yes, sir. I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good as well.
Awesome. Really excited about this discussion, really excited about the guests that we have. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited to dig into this topic, man. I think this is such a critical topic that we need to discuss in depth, and really begin to look at solutions to what we are currently facing as a nation. I think it's really important. So I just want to commend Starcom for putting on such an initiative. I'm just really happy to be a part of it.
Thank you so much, Imran, for agreeing to join us.
As you said, we're discussing solutions.
We hear about the problems all the time.
But we never hear any suggestions or solutions.
So I am very excited to be having this discussion today.
Yeah, definitely.
Go ahead, Imran.
In my mind, I think that as we kind of have this conversation, what will be really important, especially as we start the discussion, as we hear from our guests, is to at least have an accurate or a good picture of what the problem is. Because in order for us to really dig into these solutions, over the next six weeks, I think it's really important that we preface this conversation with at least giving our understanding of the scope of the problem, what are some of the causes, and so forth, and then we can begin to dig into the solutions.
Agreed. 100%. Say good evening to Ms. Kim Ramsey and Professor Dwayne Devenish. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Good evening to everybody.
I'm pretty good. Good evening, Barbados. All right, Imran posed the question. The floor is open.
In your guys' view, how would you describe the current landscape of Barbados as it relates to this issue of crime and violence across the country?
You want me to talk first?
We are seeing unprecedented levels of violence over the past 10 to 15 years, an upsurge in gun violence particularly. And more concern is the brazen nature of some of these claims. They're moving from private spaces to public spaces. People are shooting wherever they see, wherever they get at you. Who is wrong, what time of day it is, whether it's a mall, a store, a shop, a bus stand. So we are seeing, as I said, an increase in the nature of the types of crimes we are seeing and the acts in terms of the brazen nature of it. I won't say that it's more young people because young people have always been at the focus of a lot of the crime for decades. From back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, when you look at statistics on crime, it was always the young cohort of persons in the society who unfortunately are the ones who commit the majority of offenses. It does not mean that all young people are negative, but those are the ones that we tend to see as the ones committing the more serious offenses. But 30 years ago, a lot of the crime was more, people who engage in serious crimes, you would see them engaging in things like stabbings and even throwing a rock at somebody, etc. From the early 90s, we saw a change in the landscape of crime. where we saw an increase in guns, an increase in gun usage. And I think this will come off the ends, the back end of the drug trade, because along with the drug trade came the gun trade in the late 80s and early 90s. And that is how we saw the shift in the type of crime, the typology of crime, and the offender. As I said, the one who becomes more brazen, the one who uses a gun to solve disputes. When you look at the types of disputes, they're not even serious disputes. So people use guns to get at their enemies and so on, or to solve disputes. And that is troubling to us in the criminal justice system.
Yeah. No, that's good. I want to come back to a point that you mentioned just really quick before you move on to the others, because I find it interesting for some reason, and I guess maybe because you are really well researched in that you understand the history of criminal activity and violent behavior. But in my mind, I am thinking that somehow it feels as if the offenders, and in some instances, even the victims, are becoming younger and younger. It feels like I am seeing in the newspaper 18 and 19 year olds, 21 and 24. So, it felt to me, before I would see individuals who would have been maybe in their early 30s and or late 20s. And for me, that would have been considered young. But no, it seems as if we are seeing instances of individuals who are experiencing this or perpetrating this type of behavior, almost like just out of school, just out of secondary school. But you're saying that you're saying that this has been somewhat of a normal occurrence. Like, you want to shed
more light? If you for instance, in my first book, Barbados Most Wanted, if you look at the age that most of the persons in my book started to commit crimes, they started at 12, 13, 14. When Barry Jack was killed, Barry Jack was 19 years old when he was in Black Rock, and that was in 1992. So mm-hmm. What is that? Yes, some of those men would have died as old criminals, but they started their criminal careers when they were 11 and 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So this is it is not surprising that a lot of persons commit crimes, that are the people that are committing violent crimes and serious crimes are young people, because this is the nature of offending. Young people are the ones that are not as mature as us that are a bit older. but we all know when we are like 18, 19, we're not settled, we're not mature enough in our thing. I'm not saying again that not everybody, all young people are negative, but those who commit crimes, they tend to be very young. As I said, 13, 14, they're not focused enough, and they do not have enough social support. They're not socialized. Their socialization is lacking, proper socialization. And then you have the influence of the peer groups. So those are the things that come at young people, and those are the challenges that we face. So what initiatives by NGOs and government is to, really zero in, zone in on the young people and implement programs geared at the young people to basically steer them away from a life of crime, because we understand that is the impressionable age.
Right. Yeah, so sadly, Kim, this is the norm. We're just seeing it more now in these times.
Yes, I think it's because too of the internet, social media. Mm-hmm. But I'm not saying that we should normalize it. I think, as I said, what has changed is the brazen nature of the crimes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was not like how it was. You would never hear in the 80s and 90s of a mall shooting, or publicly opening a gun and shooting at people, innocent civilians and so on. But that is what we are facing, the criminal justice system. We are seeing as the concern that we really need to stamp out.
Yeah. Imran, I can come in here because I agree with Kim. And I would add that when you look at the profile of many of these young offenders, we cannot ignore the social and economic conditions.
Yeah.
Okay. Out of which many of these young people have come. If you look, for example, at many of the young offenders, and you tie that back to the number of the communities, a lot of these communities carry a high concentration of unemployed youth who've dropped out of school very early, who have been described as low skill, quote unquote, and have been frustrated by limited economic opportunities. And I was speaking to someone the other day that COVID-19 has created a melting pot, because COVID-19 created this perfect cocktail of conditions, psychological, mental health, limited access to income sources, job layoff, unemployment, all of the works to be a breeding ground for criminality, especially for young people. I've done some analysis of the percentage of young people relative to older people over 40 that have been displaced. And young people represented the significant proportion of those on the unemployment line. If you look at the NIS statistics and so forth, right now, as I think the last report we had from unemployment was about 17.5%. So it's not surprising that during this period, what we consider the pandemic period, that you would have these sharp inclines of uptake in crimes, especially as Kim said, violent crimes and even acquisitive offenses like stealing and burglary occurring during this time.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And I want to jump in because the community that I grew up in, there are 14 and 15 year olds that through the COVID pandemic dropped out of school entirely.
Mm.
And are now, those individuals moved from attending Sunday school. So I serve in the church, the lone church that is in the community. And those individuals would come to youth service on Fridays and so forth. They were part, you know, we were doing some work with them. But now, not only have they dropped out of school, but they've stopped coming to church and they have started using drugs and so forth. So I know firsthand what you were saying about just the displacement that was caused by the COVID pandemic. And, you know, the truth is when we think about the high youth unemployment rate, when we think about the amount of young people leaving school without education, when we think about the economic challenges that many families are faced with, and maybe even as we consider broken families and homes, all of those converge to create what you call the perfect storm, mm-hmm. you know, that mm-hmm. produces then this type of behavior and sees it unfold. Really, really interesting.
So as we would put it now, it's a whole big mess. Yeah. I actually got some very interesting figures today. These are some unofficial stats of major crime in Barbados that suggests that crime is actually down by 31%. I find it very interesting because when you look at social media, when you read the newspaper, when you watch the news, it seems like all you're hearing about is this shooting, this stabbing, this person is dead. And I'm like looking at these figures for the whole day and trying to figure out what are you talking about?
I can probably speak to that. And I think this goes back to even the article that Kim, I would have written to the newspaper. Let me give you an example. Now, it is not to begin said that, you know, crime has been, you know, like scientifically increased, that we have scientific evidence that crime has increased. Mm-hmm. Technically, on a global scale, crime actually increased and decreased. Let me explain what really happened. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, we had a kind of a program, a one-year program, I call it, of stay-at-home orders and restrictions. Now, based on international trends, anytime there are stay-at-home restrictions, stringent curfew orders, just after the introduction of those restrictions, you will see that sharp decline in crime because, of course, everyone is at home. So things like violent offenses, those types of interpersonal conflicts that you would typically have when you're together, when you have the opportunity to go outside and to interface, those opportunities no longer prevail because most people are staying at home. Now, of course, on one side, those stay-at-home restrictions would create things or conditions for intimate partner violence and domestic abuse and child abuse. But here's the thing, the trends actually show that just after relaxation or lifting of restrictions, there's this sharp incline now of violent crimes. And this is all, again, going back to the melting pot metaphor, that a lot of these frustrations that come with stay-at-home restrictions and lockdowns and shutdowns, clearly all of those frustrations are released once lockdown restrictions are lifted or relaxed. Mm-hmm. So then you will see that sharp incline. But then when there's a COVID-19 increase in COVID-19 cases and the government response by putting in a curfew or putting in a restriction on your mobility, then you will see that sharp decline again. So it's not unusual across the international sphere that you will see these kinds of ups, ebbs and flows of crime as stay-at-home orders and restrictions and curfews are in place and then are further relaxed when things become much better on the COVID-19 scene.
Aside of that, there's also the issue of comparison between years. So let me just give you an example. If we had 1,000 total number of crimes, 1,000 crimes, those crimes are various crimes. There's property crimes, there's violent crimes, there's firearm offenses, etc. If you are tallying 1,000 crimes occurred last year, and then this year we have 900 crimes, that is a decrease, but it doesn't mean that there are not increases in specific crimes and decreases in specific crimes.
Right.
So for instance, again, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but let's say we had 20 murders this time last year compared to 14.
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying, you know, it seems like violent crime is always in your face. The reality is that the statistics will show that there has been a decrease, because if you had 20 last year and 14 this year, naturally there's a decrease in violent in murders. I'm just using it as an example.
Mm-hmm.
But have an increase in a particular type of crime and a decrease in all the others. So when you are talking about, this is back to Scott Laura, if you're saying that there's a 13% decrease in crime,
mm-hmm.
that overall type of crime, but there may be increases and decreases in specific types of crimes.
Yes, right. I'm seeing that there was actually an increase mm-hmm. in aggravated burglary this year.
Right. Right, which can occur as a result of what Dwayne was just saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, with persons being home and then, you know, with the, as he called, the perfect storm, unemployment, loss of jobs, unemployment, the pandemic, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will start to get, you know.
Yeah, it aligns exactly with what he said, actually, because there was actually an increase in rape too, according to the figures that I received.
Intimate partner violence. And we had, I think recently, it was a murder. And then the guy, I can't remember, it was an arson case.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was a young guy, 33 years old.
Yeah.
And you will see a number of these cases over time as you have this frustration continuing in the country.
Right. Okay, so good. So I want to ask you guys a question in relation to that, because while I agree that COVID-19 has definitely played a role and has been a contributing factor to some of these based on what you would have just explained, Mr. Devinish, I also reflect on previous years, not too long ago, when we had almost 50 murders, but there was no COVID-19, there was no lockdown. So in your mind, I know we talked through it just a little bit, what would you say are some of those specific contributing factors? You know, what are, you know, we talked about the perfect storm, but would you guys mind maybe in your own experience or just based on the data, what would you say are some of the causal factors that contribute to specifically as we look at this youth, these young people, you know, what is missing? What are we not doing right? Where does the problem lie?
Those are a series of questions and that you
can. Oh, man.
You have to have them one at a time.
Okay. From my experience in dealing with homicide statistics, there are so many factors that cause crimes, that cause murders. But the most common one is disputes. When I did homicide study back in 2004, we found that one of the major drivers of homicides was disputes, mm-hmm. either on off. Are ongoing feuds between persons, between groups. So what I find though is that people a lot of people do not know how to resolve conflict amicably. And if you look at some of the reasons and some of the causes of some homicides, it would blow your mind. Some of them as simple as somebody saying something that another person didn't like,
mm-hmm.
and going home and getting a gun and coming back and shooting the person.
You disrespect me.
Right. So I sit back and I see people constantly, you know, going at what are we doing about crime? But a lot of these crimes are domestic issues, community issues,
mm.
the issues of people as I said, the inability to resolve conflict, the access to firearms, which we have to deal with, you know, at join our ports, et cetera, et cetera. Alienation, the fact that some men see guns as a solution to problems. I have a problem with this person, I'm going to go and get a gun and solve my problem. Okay. The whole to reason, they
either buy a gun or rent a gun.
They're irrational. And they have limited thinking skills and coping skills. That is how I see it, especially when I review how a lot of these homicides occur. As I said, the gun problem. Some people now use guns as a fashion statement. I have an AK, I have whatever you call them. Hmm. But we actually have these kind of issues going on in Barbados. There's the gun outfits. No, but we're going, as you say, you're going back to earlier years. Where people turn up at fets with a gun because they like to pose with it, because it makes them look like a shotter. And all of this is part of the underground world, the criminal underworld, where the person with the biggest gun gets the biggest respect. So it is all about this subculture. There's a subculture that which lends to this kind of thinking that, you know, I'm a show off that I have 2, 3, and 4 guns. Some people say they use it for protection. Again, back to the subculture. Because when you and another man are at war, you have to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's necessary. So there are so many factors. It is, as I said, disputes, feuds between groups, feuds in gangs. Some people just, as I said, when you read these cases, you'll be just amazed at what people kill each other over girls. Some men kill other women over girls. You disrespect me. Or somebody slept with some other another man's girlfriend, and you're gonna shoot him. So these come back now to an underlying issue of, as I said, conflict mediation, gun violence, getting the guns off the streets, and basically working with our alienated youth who believe that their only solution to conflict is to resort to violence.
Yeah,
very true. Very true. I agree with that. I would just add that, I mean, a lot of this also stems from the home environment, the family environment, how we raise our young boys and young girls. I mean, I cannot stay here and say that, you know, we have to place everything at the level of the justice system or the level of the wider social institutions and not remember that we have a family structure that at the end of the day, it's our first encounter as human beings with understanding how to deal with conflict, understanding how to communicate, how to work with each other amicably. Those are the things that we have to look at if we are going to consider a preventative approach. But my belief is always to treat crime as a public health problem. I've always had conversations with Kim about this, about the fact that if we see crime as a public health problem, it means our approach to it is going to be the same way that we would treat to take something like COVID-19. Right. And one of the first stages, think about it, one of the first stages to deal with a pandemic or to deal with a public health problem is to understand, as you said, in the nature and the causes of the said problem. And that is true scientific research, true data analysis, and true, you know, a good interpretive judgment. And I think that is where Kim's department come in. But after that, we have to then look at enacting those recommendations and interventions.
Mm-hmm. Let's not forget that we also have Shamar in studio. Shamar, you have lived this. You actually went to prison. You're out now and you're trying to live a different kind of life. Tell me a little bit about yourself and your story.
My name is Shamar Bernard. Friends, people out there more know me as Sham or Sinister Sham.
Mm-hmm.
People more know me as Sinister Sham.
Right.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
I went to prison for possession of firearm, ammunition, and I was involved in a gun battle with the police.
Wow. How old were you at the time?
29.
Mm-hmm.
How
did you find yourself in that situation? Like, what was your life like as a child and that sort of stuff coming up?
I had a good upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
Mom was always there. My stepfather played a good role, you know. Church and stuff like that. Was one of the poorest families in the neighborhood.
Right.
But I didn't let that like hold me down or nothing like that. Always just a strife, try to strife to do, to get there, to, mm-hmm. to better the family.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it would take to better the family.
Right.
Maybe something positive or maybe something negative.
Ah. So that's how you ended up with a gun in your possession.
Yeah.
Well.
Wow. I heard the one of the guys there said about men can rent a gun and buy a gun.
Is that true?
Yes, you can. But why rent a gun when you could rent Shamar?
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Right.
Why rent a gun?
Serious things.
When
sure.
you could rent Shamar.
Mm-hmm.
Because Shamar is effective with a gun.
Right.
Sinister Sham is effective with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So why rent a gun and then go get to somebody when you could rent Shamar?
Mm-hmm.
And Shamar need the money.
Right.
You know, so that's how we started up.
So that's a reality in Barbados, you're telling me. I could rent a Shamar.
You could rent a Shamar to go guys out there good at what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
As social media.
Mm-hmm.
You go up on social media. You watch how they shoot.
You are get you to serious?
The galley. You go to the galley.
Mm-hmm.
You practice. You put your bottles, you practice, and you do your thing. You become good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get out there now. And the real thing now. And mm-hmm. you start to build what we would say in the positive world, a portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And people get to know that you get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
You hit the target.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So you become a recognized hitman, so to speak.
For sure.
Well, I am pretty sure many eyebrows are raised right now. I can't even get mine down. Like, this is
crazy.
Real life. This is crazy.
Yes, it is. But it's reality. It's a reality, Scott. Because, and that was an article that was covered in the newspaper three Sundays ago, the whole issue of hiring hitmen now to commit crimes. And as he correctly said, that is one of the ways that Barbados is going, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to target young boys, impressionable young persons who need money. So you will hear some of these fellas say, some people kill somebody. I mean, maybe did a gun study in the prison. Some of the men in prison said, you know, they were considered hitmen, and people would kill people for a pair of sneakers.
Wow.
Kill people for a pair for a shirt for $100, whatever the price is, because they want a name. And that is another thing too. A lot of these boys on the streets, they're looking for a name, for fame,
mm-hmm.
and part of the subculture, where they do not gain status traditionally and as a male by going to school, getting a good education, getting a good job, and so on. But on the streets, you get a name, and that name carries you far.
Mm-hmm.
It does not carry you far, as I said, in traditional society, but in the subculture, a name as a shooter, as a bad boy, it gets you the girls, it gets you the guns, it gets respect, which is what a lot of these boys want. They're aiming for respect and to have a name. I remember a couple of years ago, we were doing some interviews, and I can't remember if it was Glendaria or Dodds, but one boy said that, you know, he went and picked up a gun because his name was not ringing on the streets. He was not name blinging, and he wanted his name to be blinging. Because he went quiet, nobody ain't calling his name anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of what a lot of our young boys are dealing with, are facing. And we, when I say we, I mean we as the traditional part of society, we have a lot of work to do in terms of reshaping the thinking of a lot of these young boys from a very young age. We can't wait till they're in primary school or 11. We have to start with them from the time they could talk.
Mm-hmm.
Socializing them into pro anti-criminal attitudes and pro-social ways of behaving.
Yeah, Shamar, I'd like to ask you though, because you know I do some work in the prison as well, and one of the things that we are acutely aware of is that most of these individuals who are in prison for serious criminal offenses were fully aware of the consequences. They knew that their involvement in this lifestyle could land them potentially either in prison for a long time or could cause their death. But for some reason, they still found themselves, you know, neck deep, fully emerged, fully submerged in the culture and involved in this activity. What have you seen on the streets as some of those, what causes a young person, what causes an individual from your perspective, you know, to get involved in that type of behavior? Is it family issues, as Dwayne would have mentioned? You know, does it have to do with poverty? Like, what in your experience do you believe it is?
I believe it's poverty. I don't believe it's family. Family could got a lot to do with it, but most of the people or the young people that get involved in crime, you look at the family structure. They got a good family structure.
Mm-hmm.
They went to good schools. We had to carry on a program in prison when I was in prison in the What's Next program with an officer named Mr. Tull. And when we joined a lot of the youngsters in between the age of 16 and 21 that in prison for gang violence. When you check, they went to good schools, family was always behind them, had good family support. So, like, is the influence and the law with the scene, and right. some of them poor, and then the, as you would say, the dance in the neighborhood, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And take care of them and make sure that they're good. And, you know, if a youngster could come and do a shooting and get $2,000, $3,000, he feel good. He ain't gonna go out there and take out a shovel and spin a shovel to get $350 or $400 at any week.
That's easy money, quick money.
That's quick money.
Mm-hmm.
They could carry home a little thing and give mama, she can want to know where it come from, but they could try to deter from that. You want to carry home a little thing and give mama. Got saying that I could be out sweet like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. You could floss a little bit.
I could
bit.
Come and drink a drink.
Yeah.
And smoke everybody else. So that is basically it though.
So you're thinking is that it's poverty that is the driving factor.
Yeah.
Poverty and the influence of the community. You know, an interesting statistic, Kim, is that, or at least I read it somewhere, that said kids who grew up in negative family environments but good communities turn out better than children who grew up in the opposite setting. Would you say that is true?
I would say it's true, because the community got a lot to do with raising a child. The community
I agree that poverty has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. But so remember that poverty is not the only, there are some people who are not poor that commit crimes too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They commit different types of crime.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? But they commit crime, obviously, with different factors. But I mean, while I understand that poverty is one of the drivers behind it, I would not sit here and say that it is the main driver of a lot of violence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. As I said, some people are just influenced by the communities.
Mm-hmm.
Even some people, because of early dropout of school, and you know, because they drop out of school, they seem to the lure of the streets, it's overwhelming. They do not have the social skills. They do not have, you know, they do not have a lot of the other skills that can get them employed, and it's easy to fall into a life of crime.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I agree. That's why we always say to people that crime is multi-causal, and there's so many lanes and different avenues. Because what would make one man commit a crime or go and stick up a bank is not the same reason another man may kill somebody or shoot somebody. There's so many variables at play. But I will agree that poverty has been a constant variable in the literature as it relates to one of the drivers of criminal activity.
Yeah. And let me also add here, I mean, I don't want us to discount the pull factors. You can see from Shamar's response, that lure of the financial value or the economic value of, you know, being a hired gun. We have to recognize that. Think about it this way. I mean, a lot of these young people with guns, they don't manufacture the guns. They're not the financiers behind the gun trade and so on. We know that there are certain organs out there that are well-to-do individuals who are responsible for a lot of what we see, especially from the supply side. And all they really want, as you can see clear from Shamar's response, is the demand.
And if you can make crime as attractive, then all of the other push, all the other push factors like poverty and so on, they oftentimes go out the window. Because as Kim said, you don't have to be poor to be in a life of crime. So I want us to still recognize that there are those hidden sources out there that have, as we would consider to be the well-to-do or the more affluent, who have the wherewithal to finance this enterprise that we call crime now.
I would agree.
I've also noted that the heart of man has become very cold. Because if you're going to walk up to somebody and just shoot them just like that, they don't care. Then some men sit down and calculate, okay, I'm 20, 21. The most I can get is 15 years to this. Mm-hmm. I can be up by 30-something, 40. The men sit down and calculate.
I've heard that science talk before, you know? For real.
Because there, unless, I'm not saying that our prison is this, but some throughout the world are what I call urbanized ghettos or institutionalized ghettos. So men come home, they call it home. Some go prison to see their friends. They hang out with their friends, just like it's any block.
But that comes back to something you said earlier, Kim. Like, we live in different times. The thing now is to be popular. Back in my day, I wanted good grades. I wanted rewards from my mom and dad for getting good grades in school. Right now, people want the most followers on Instagram. They want the name.
Yeah. Fame. Mm-hmm. Fame. You know, I'm a bad boy. Nobody care around me. I'm from a particular block.
Yeah.
And people on that block, nobody don't care around them because, you know, this block got respect. It has stars. It get bigger. It get caught on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Radio, though.
Exactly. That's crazy. And everyone wants their avenue.
Listen to Heart. Let me say this right now. I listen to Heart FM a lot. And I hear, I sit down sometimes with in awe. And all of these blocks in Barbados get here bigger. And the people on some of these blocks who are well-known criminals. And I am like, what is Star coming? I'm going to call it. Oh, what are they doing? Are y'all basically enabling the behavior?
Maybe I speak on behalf of behavior. DJs. Maybe we are unaware of the reputations of some of the people.
Really?
Right. Oh, I don't know. Seriously.
I'm from Black Rock, so I got bigger. My boy's from Black Rock. I'm from Black Rock, down Free Hills.
I admit, I didn't even know half the names until they start hearing them on the radio. And I make calls to people and like, who are these people? And then I hear the histories behind them and I'm like,
Yeah.
But you guys do make a good point though, because whether it be on the radio station or social media or television or music videos, there is this glorification of crime and criminal behavior. You know, individuals love the fame that comes along with people knowing their name or being fearful of them or fearful of their area. So that definitely is a strong point for sure. Shamar, you were gonna say something, it seems.
I was touching on the point about the guns and all the guns come in and what's not. Guns is a big business. I know people that was selling drugs, bringing in drugs, and they stopped with the drugs to deal guns. Wow. Guns are ammunition. Guns is big business. The cheapest gun right now is $5,000.
Yep.
Cheapest gun right now is $5,000. We got guns up to $20,000, $25,000. Mm. Wow. ARs and you know what I'm saying? So like, people saying crime. We were so on to the drugs. That the guns, yes, the guns was coming with the drugs, but then there was the people that bringing the guns and they care about the drugs.
Right. So we were so focused on drugs that we didn't focus on guns, and the guns slipped in.
The guns slipping. Guns is big business.
Mm-hmm.
Big business. Guns and pills.
Mm-hmm.
Big business right now. So why? Really push with the bulk of the bulky product,
mm-hmm.
when they could get a smaller product,
mm-hmm.
smaller items, bigger value.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting, because you hardly hear about the seizure of pills, as you put it, in Barbados. You hear about the bigger, bulkier things like weed.
Correct.
Yeah.
The money really is, that's, to me, that's just the side traction. Mm-hmm. The bulkier thing is just the side traction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The pills and the firearms, that's what it is right now.
And Brian is already 10 minutes after 7. We only going to
7:30. I was just going to say, Scott, we need to really begin to...
We don't have enough time.
We're ready to go to 10 o'clock, guys.
I feel like there's so much to be discussed. But what can we do? You know, and Shamar, it would be great maybe if we can start here with your story of change. You know, like what would you say contributed to you now trying to get your life or having gotten your life onto this path? You know, what changed for you? And then we can begin to have that discussion around what are some of the things that we can do? What are some of the solutions? What are some of the recommendations that you guys may have? So Shamar, would you want to go?
For me, the life changer for me was steering, laying on my back and steering up into the nozzle of the officer's firearm. After the whole gun battle and what's not, you know, because I was out there doing this and I never got shot. You know what I'm saying? I never got shot in all that I did and I was involved with. And that experience of getting shot and being there, like, he ain't got the firearm unreachable. And, you know, you in the position that you have put people in. So that was the main life changer for me, you know?
Yeah.
We would say to the young people, just slow down. Stop trying to speed, stop trying to go so fast. Keep away from a lot of these things that we all seen on social media. There's something called a guarantee. And you're all seeing a lot of guarantees getting murder on social media, on phones and things, when they're seeing it. But when they don't really know the thing behind that, because that's people's families. Family members, that's people that cut people and carry them and say, well, listen, I can't, you don't hear with me. To deal with business. You can stop down here and deal with business and they can go back at the road. But not knowing that the man going back at the road and make a deal with the big man in another country, where you can bring this man, if I don't pay by a certain time, you could do what you want. He's guaranteed that I can pay you. This is my guarantee I can pay you. So the agreement is set there. If you don't pay by this particular time, well,
so somebody's life is the guarantee?
Correct.
Well,
I can kill the guarantee and I can sell it for you. But this the guarantee that I can pay you. So most of the time when you see them people getting killed, them people don't even know that them there to deal with something.
But they don't know the real story
behind it. So when you all see those people getting killed and think with them themselves that it's a fame thing. I think it ain't a fame thing. That's the real them people business. So I will ask that the youngsters to refrain from adopting that style.
Just slow down. It's so hard though, Shamar. You on social media, you seeing everybody with these fancy cars, everybody going the newest Jordans. You want the same thing too?
Want the same thing, so you want the prison that come along with it and the grave that come along with it. Because you ain't gonna push up no daisies. It's Westbury Cemetery with some nut grass and wild bush. So it ain't no daisies and prison is not a bed of roses. You could bet the best out of a bad situation. Try to make the best out of a bad situation once you're there. But just refrain, just slow down. Cause you speeding, you're gonna crash. You're gonna crash.
At some point in time, you're gonna lose control and crash.
And the crash might be causing your life. You might not be able to come back now and voice your story like I did.
Might not be a Shamar.
Correct, because I was close to death. Very, very close to death. You know what I mean? So just slow down. Just take it easy. Whole life ahead of you.
Yeah, that's good. What were some of the obstacles that you had to overcome on your journey of change? Like, how difficult or easy was it? Because I can imagine, you know, staring up the nozzle of a gun, your entire life flashed before you and you made a decision, look, something about my life needs to change. But I am sure that journey was a process. And like for you, what were some of the obstacles that you would have experienced or faced?
The loss of the loss of people that you think it was friends. I had to get over the obstacle of fear when I come home.
Mm-hmm.
Fear on the streets, because as I would say, remember, I was not out here snatching handbags or TFA CDs or nothing. Mm-hmm. I was out here hurting people in a serious way. So the fear of pulling down the gun and carrying on my day-to-day life.
So fear of retaliation.
Correct.
Yeah.
How society will accept me in the work field and stuff like that as a man coming from prison. And I would say that it that's what surprised me.
How so?
Because I was looking for a more negative response. I get to that. I didn't get negative because I got negative responses, but I was more looking for more negative than positive. And what I would see is I would give thanks to society for, you know, opening up and giving me a chance to prove myself where the workforce is concerned. Ministry of Health, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, the Ministry of Health. Big thanks to them for allowing Shamar to show what he can do, you know. Because when I came home, it was a bit hard, a bit rough. And a good friend of mine, my name is Mr. Tull, when the ash came in, he said, Shamar, the ash came in and got a place to think, what are you going to do? He said, I don't know. He said, if we give you $350, you could start, you could get something going on. And I said, yeah. And I took that $350. I rented a power wash, I got a bread drink, and we hit the road, and we start power washing some places and washing down some places and stuff like that. Shortly after, we was doing such good work, me and the young man was doing such good work and stuff like that. We got a phone call asking from a man by the name of Mr. Tarn from the Ministry of Health, gave me an opportunity to clean some of the vaccination centers and stuff like that. And you ain't turn back. You ain't turn back from there, you know. I was just give big thanks to all the people that gave me the opportunity to think. I can remember one time my secretary was making a call inquiring about a job, and she told me what she was inquiring with the job, the young lady, and she was giving the woman my name. At the business, the woman was typing my name in the computer, Googling my name.
Well, she was searching to see what pops up.
What pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, okay. So when she told me about it, I went and Googled my name now. And
what popped up? What came up?
You see him, what he was charged for and all that day. And I believe that is why. Don't care how good the portfolio was that my secretary put forward. True, seeing what she saw, the woman seeing what she saw, she didn't give me the work.
That's part of your life that can never be erased. It's like a stand on character.
Yeah, so that's why I will give a big thanks, you know, to all the people that give me the opportunity to show what I can do as a rehabilitated prisoner. No.
That's definitely a topic we have to touch on in this series at some point, rehabilitation, because you and I discussed that already. Yeah. But let's continue here. 19 minutes after 7, Imran. We got 11 minutes left. We still in touch on solutions yet.
Yeah, so we get in there now. So let's hear from our guests about what are their thoughts on some of the things that can be done. Who wants to go first?
Ladies first.
Okay. As the crime, the issue of crime is multifaceted, the solutions are also multifaceted.
Mm-hmm.
And I have jotted just a few because obviously I can't go through them all. I want to address though the issue of enabling behavior.
Right.
I believe that a lot of our from my research, it is extremely troubling the amount of parents, especially mothers, that I see enable the behavior of their children. And encourage them, hide them, support their criminal activities, and so on.
Mm.
Mothers, sisters and mothers that want to make them go to work, have them home doing nothing in the house and giving them money. we have to address these things, grandmothers, etc. And then when the son commits a crime, not my child, not my boy. My boy is a good boy. My boy is the next best thing to Jesus. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that.
Are you a see? Would you see? Would
we
you
need to stop also? This enabling behavior among our. Stop, mothers, stop it.
Yeah. Would you see also?
You're not giving your children any opportunity to be better.
Mm-hmm. I think Imran is trying to ask a question.
Yeah, but you know, Kim's passion is coming through, yeah. Right?
Loud and proud.
Yeah, but one of the things that I've also noticed on social media is whenever somebody goes to prison now, under in the comment section is, you know, free this body, free that. Mm. And if anybody says anything to the extent of, well, the person, if they did not do the crime, they would not be going to prison. Mm-hmm. Everybody comes for that person.
I was just about to say that. It must come a road. So that goes back to my second point here, which is that our value system needs to be changed. I sit back and I read the comment section quietly most of the time on social media, and I'm like, we are going to hell in a basket.
Yes, it's kind of disturbing for you a lot of the time.
Yes, because I'm like, our value system is changing. It's eroded. We have no more, as somebody said at work today, the moral compass has changed. I see it every day. I see how we flout our laws, running through red lights, cursing the police, people crossing, pedestrian crossing. It's just everything. It's just an erosion of our value system. So we need to rein back in our values. What the things we learned at school, yes, please, no, please, how to speak to people, how to deal with the same conflict I spoke about earlier. We have to work with our young people. I go back to the early thing. Most of our crime is committed by young people. We have to engage them. We have to do a lot of community engagement. We have to target the vulnerable in our community, the at risk, which we've started to do. The drug trade is another issue that people going to get involved in. And in many times it does not end well. They either hospital, cemetery, or jail. We already know that's how it comes. People get greedy. People get jealous. The drug trade is a business that it is not a normal business. It is a criminal activity, and many times it does not end well. So we have to encourage people from engaging in the drug trade. And as I said earlier, we have to give more opportunities for our marginalized youth. I heard Shamar just now talk about opportunities. We have to give more opportunities to our young men. Sure. Longing. A lot of them join gangs because they want to belong. When I talk to them, they talk about my gang is a family. So as we talked earlier about the push and pull factor, we have the push is, you know, they have issues within the home and it pushes them away and they find love and support on the block. We have to then embrace our young people and welcome them. That's why we need a lot more mentors in the school system and basically embrace our young people and steer them away from a life of crime. So those are just some of the issues that we need to, and of course, we have to address the problem of the gun trade. We have to stop the hemorrhage. The gun trade. We have to stop the hemorrhaging, the guns from coming through our ports. And without the guns, I mean, people say that if there's not a gun, there will be a knife. But the reality is if we train our young people, as I said, in conflict resolution, and we get these guns off the streets, I think that we will see a much safer and better Barbados.
That's true. I agree, 100%.
Yeah, definitely. That was a mouthful. I don't even know if she's left anything for you to see.
No, I think so. I am happy to report that she covered really the multiplicity of the issues. And I would just say, or I would reiterate here, we need to see crime as a public health problem. And if we see crime as a public health problem, the same way that we respond to COVID so strategically and so forth, that we have to treat the crime the same way. And that begins, as I said, with a careful analysis of the problem and the causes. But after that, we have to take a whole of country approach where we leverage now all of the services, the education sector, our social care services, our educational sector, as I said, the justice system, all of those various organs of society must come together to deal with this problem in a multifaceted way. That's the only way we can get over this.
I absolutely agree. You know, one of the things that I have come to realize is a really powerful point that you made about belonging, Kim. This is critical. because belonging influences belief and belief shapes behavior. Our identity does not start with who am I, but who do I belong to? You know, I want to be just like my father. I want me just, so from the time you find a place, a space to belong, all of a sudden you want to know, you find yourself believing the same things that those people believe. Mm-hmm. You find yourself behaving the same way that those individuals behave. That's one of the things that I experienced. My father was prickle. I mean, my dad was given to drugs, you know, from a very, I only knew my dad, you know, like 9, 10, 11, as somebody who was addicted to drugs, tried to kill himself on 2 occasions. And I always felt like a problem. My father tried to commit suicide twice, almost died on the second occasion. You know, my uncle, you know, was the closest thing to a father to me. My uncle was a criminal. My uncle was a robber and a thief. There were guns in the house, dime a dozen, right? We would go into the ghetto, go into the gully and shoot and so forth. And so I would have a lot of issues at home, but I felt that the block was the place where I belonged. Mm-hmm. You know, and that sense of belonging, all of a sudden, I grew up in Sunday school, but check me now talking about marijuana grew on Solomon's grave, and I just being where I was smoking, you know, 15, 20 joints a day. I started because facts don't change people's minds, friendships do. It's people's minds don't change unless they change their tribe. And the second thing that I also think is really important is this idea of not just awareness, but accessibility. So many young people may be aware of what the alternatives are, but in their mind, is this accessible to me? Like, can I, like you, is you for me? You know, like you in for me, man. I grew up in ghetto, I went Parkinson, you know, community college in for me, you know, polytechnic in for me. This is all I ever knew. This is all I know. And they become casualties of the culture. And so I think one of the things that we have to do in our intervention is to not only give our young people something to say no to, but even more powerful, we have to give them something to say yes to. We have to give them a sense of purpose, a sense of meaning, help them to understand that their life have value, so that from that place they make better choices, better decisions. So yeah, I agree with all that you guys said. Shamar, anything else from you? And then Scott, man, you can take it away, bro.
Yeah,
if you made a part 2, 3, and 4 of this,
we got 6 coming. Don't worry.
Yeah. What I would say is that. It's not all about bashing the youths. It's not all about that. It's about gaining compliments too. You got to compliment the youngsters that come out and get involved in the ASH program and stuff like that. It show that they're willing to want work. If the avenue open up, they're willing to work.
Mm-hmm.
You want some? When you pass inside the road, and they are cleaning up the road. They are cleaning up. You want some? So it's show that, and they're coming out and they're doing it. So they're showing that as long as avenue present itself, they're willing to go forward. Go commend the young men that selling the vegetables and the fruits,
juices,
you know.
Akis, honestly, they buy from them all, you
know,
the time.
So in the midst of highlighting the crime and violence, we still they got some good ones out there, and as long as doors open up and stuff, they're willing to step through it. So we need to also compliment them as well. You know what I mean? We need to let them know, well, we see you.
Yeah.
We see you. Because them now going to be the light.
Right.
And the mix now, are they like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the ones that might be slightly drifting, well, he complimenting, he seeing what he doing, what he want to do good things to and get compliment to. I didn't want to just say, my eyes, Tom Brown signed that thing, he just said he father.
Right.
You want to sign up and don't fall far from the tree and all kind of thing. I want to see you, are you out here? You know? Compliment them too, man.
Right.
That's not spoiling them.
But that's why we're here, fighting crime, discussions, solutions to crime and violence. Imran, thank you so much for agreeing to co-host. It was awesome.
This is good.
Mr. Professor Dwayne Devenish, thank you so much as well. Kim Ramsey, criminologist, you made some very interesting comments. We need to have you back so we can address them properly. And of course, thank you so much to our producer, Mr. Dennis Johnson. My name is Scott LaRock Headley, and we are signing out. Next time, we'll be back next week, and next time we will open up the phone lines and the WhatsApp so we can hear from you.
on Fighting Crime, discussing solutions to crime and violence.